Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock this evening. Danny McCoy is with me, the CEO of IBEC, as is Tom McDonald for the Nevin Economic Research Institute, to give their reaction to Budget 26. But Susan Hayes Cullerton, the positive economist and presenter of Taking Stock, of course, is here too. Susan, what were your takeaways?
Well, first up, I think we're wrong by calling it the saying that there's absolutely nothing for the ordinary person, because the ordinary person out there is somebody who is renting, somebody who's got a mortgage, somebody who's a parent, somebody who's a carer, somebody who's running a business. So I think we need to look and frame our analysis according to that. Now, is there a lot there for everybody? No, there's not. But certainly there are things there, I think, and it's important to look at it from that perspective. I think the initial reaction, naturally enough, the people are wondering what's in it for me. And, you know, we hear something like there's 1.48 billion that's going to be now invested into childcare, etc. But people out there are asking, like, but what does that mean for my child, whether it is time that in aftercare services or different things like that? So I think that needs to be considered as well. And also, when I see something like, I think there's been quite a lot done in order to incentivize building. Naturally enough, then one might say, well, is this a tax break for landlords and for developers? Like, we have to look at then, on the other hand, Kieran, like, over 40,000 private landlords have left the market in recent years, and therefore one has to analyse, is this enough to bring them back in? And also, when it comes to, from the other side of that, of course, for people who have got mortgages, there has been an increase in interest rates in previous years in order to go against inflation. So when we see the extension of the mortgage interest tax credit, I particularly would say on that point is it's important that mortgage holders are aware that, of course, they have to actually apply for it and put it on their income tax. It's coming up to that time of year at this point. From a business's point of view, I'm certainly welcome the entrepreneur tax credit. Sorry, the entrepreneurial tax relief, where now one over the lifetime of their life can sell a business up to 1.5 million, and then they get they can pay capital gains tax at 10% instead of 33%. I think for small businesses, and particularly succession and family businesses, that's very important as well.
So some of these are ends in and of themselves. You know what I mean? Mortgage interest relief is an end in and of itself, is to make that mortgage a bit more affordable, put money back into people's pockets, some of those tax credits as well. Some of them fall into the category of the proof will be in the pudding, I guess. They're outcome based, aren't they? I mean, if reducing the VAT for those apartment buildings doesn't lead to more apartment buildings, it will have been a failure. If reducing the VAT for the hospitality industry, for some of the hospitality industry, doesn't arrest the spate of closures, that too will have been a failure. So there'll be an element of not knowing whether they're a success or not for a time.
Oh, absolutely. But I will say, on both of the points you've mentioned there, both of them are VAT. VAT is a consumption tax. So when it comes to the hospitality and people are saying, like, who will benefit? The reality is it's up to us to vote with our pockets there. Like, it's wherever you decide to go and spend your money in hospitality is who will benefit from that. So you're right in terms of what the outcome will be. But we are the consumers here. And to a lesser extent, I would say the same of apartments. Like, there's been a decline in output in apartment completions of 24.1% last year, according to the Construction Industry Federation. Like, from that perspective, as somebody who's living in a city now, and I didn't grow up in a city, like, we need to see more of that. And therefore, but again, it's similarly up to us then as individuals to decide where we're going to put that money.
Tom McDonald from the Nevin Economic Research Institute, as I mentioned, with us too. Tom, how would you describe Budget 26?
Perhaps a missed opportunity. It's a kind of a difficult one to define. It's clearly not an austerity budget. It's a 9.4 billion package, which is expansionary relative to the rate at which the economy can grow. So it'll be modestly inflationary, given the supply constraints that are in the economy. So it will push up prices when considered in the whole. There's very little for your average worker. The change in their take-home pay, but all the tax changes, PSI, income tax, local property tax, carbon tax, will be pretty flat overall. And given that most workers will have wage increases, average effective tax rates for most workers will go up a little bit. So people won't feel wealthier or richer because of this budget. But at the same time, we're in a situation where we're reliant upon the windfall taxes. We have a surplus of $5 billion next year, but $15 billion is difficult to attribute, let's put it that way. So given the economy is doing so well, we probably should be coming at it from a stronger position than we are. So I would say it would have been difficult to go much further. Arguably, they should have done less. Mm. Some of the taxation changes are questionable in terms of their actual impact.
Which ones?
Let me just talk about the VAT on hospitality one for just a second. We have an economy that is pretty hot at the moment. So we're close to full employment. So cutting taxes at that point in the economic cycle, obviously some broad-based taxes, tax cuts can make sense. The R&D tax cut maybe has a logic to it over the medium to long term. But the VAT cut, which is giving a boost to the lowest paid sector in the economy at a time of full employment, is likely to have very, very poor bang for buck. And given the opportunity cost of what else could have been done in terms of 50,000 children out of child poverty, free public transport, 500 quid to all the workers in terms of partial indexation, it seems like it wasn't the optimal direction to go. And perhaps we will look at this as a mistake longer term.
Danny McCoy from IBEC, how would you describe the budget?
I think it's actually an enterprise-focused budget, actually. You know, so from the business side, let's say that's good in of itself. Because it's kind of aimed towards economic resilience and protecting jobs, and maybe not just protecting jobs in traditional industries, but look into the future. You know, we clearly see there's an AI revolution on. Doesn't mean there'll be less jobs in the future, but they'll be doing different things. And we even see some of that in the labour market already. So the focus towards trying to be impactful, which I think, Kieran, you said at the start here, is crucial. Like, most budgets are about money. The one thing Ireland hasn't had a problem with in about 10 years, I would argue, is money. In fact, too much money in the wrong places gives rise to more problems for us than we're trying to now get out of that. So this is about the real effect of the budget. I think the real effect is we need more infrastructure. We know this, and I think it's going the right direction there. We also know there's challenges to enterprise from technology shifting, and also because of issues around our infrastructure when it comes to water, housing, energy. So I think those things are important. And also the VAT, you know, as Susan says, there were better ways of doing it. If it's labour costs were the issue in terms of the PRSI, then maybe going at VAT, because in fairness to the hospitality, that wing that are getting the 9%, they have been very explicit. They're not passing that on to the consumer. It's for their bottom line. And like, in some sense, that's fair enough if that's where they're at. But there's a better way for the government to tackle that in terms of, you know, show the distress you're in and let's try and help you through, particularly in regional places where one restaurant going to zero is a lot different to a high street Dublin where 10 restaurants go to 8.
Yeah.
So I think the VAT is probably a fairly blunt way to go at the supply side. VAT's kind of to stimulate demand. And again, as Susan said, I think people vote with their consumption choices, not for the want of money, that restaurants are in trouble.
On kind of the enterprise side then, as you say, it's an enterprise focused budget. Chambers Ireland, their reaction was, they say a budget of two halves in terms of enterprise, for some good. For others, there's an emerging group, they say, who are more and more reliant on the trickle-down impacts of some of the decisions made and more reliant on so-called government action plans, they say, which we've yet to see take effect. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I don't want to get into whataboutery, but let's do a bit of whataboutery. What about the rest of the world? You know, this, we're looking at how to distribute surpluses. And so the choices are hard, but compared to other jurisdictions, here's our chance to actually cement the windfalls. I hate that word, actually. I don't think they are windfalls. They may be temporary for half a generation. It's a different issue. We could definitely do a lot for the future with these so-called windfall corporation taxes. And I think this budget is finally starting to go in that direction. It's stopping given the huge tax rebates in terms of energy credits to every household. It's starting to acknowledge that maybe including non-indexation of income taxes, is that we actually need to start raising taxes for the greater good, that we actually deliver real enterprise stimulation and the infrastructure that we need. And it's not just about giving away money to everybody.
Tom, is it too expansionary?
Yeah, it probably is a little bit too expansionary. Given that we're pretty much at the top of the economic cycle, we've had very, very strong employment growth for, ever since lockdown ended. That's not sustainable long term. At that point in the economic cycle, as Danny says, there is a time, maybe wouldn't have put it exactly like this, but there is a time to increase taxes and there is a time to cut taxes. And you cut taxes when you're in a recession to stimulate demand very, very quickly. It works faster than infrastructure. But when the economy is booming, that's actually the time when you build up your fiscal resilience, you build up your resources. And while it may not be a windfall in the sense of, you know, a bunch of apples arrive at your door and nobody knows where they came from, in the 2030s and 2040s, when everything will start to go wrong fiscally with an aging population and all of the other all of the other fiscal demands, that windfall or that those once off or whatever we want to call it may not be there in the future. And we will have put some of that into savings funds, which creates a new revenue source. Now, some of that we should be investing in infrastructure and R&D and education, all that. But for now, this budget is too big. And rather than seeing tax cuts on particular sectors, it would have been better if we looked at ways we could have broadened the tax base.
Pascal Donoghue will be here in about half an hour, and I suspect if I put that to him, he'd say, no, we're doing those exact things that Tom has talked about. You know, we've all our rainy day funds, we have more than one, I think, add them all up by the end of the year, 24 billion. So we're back up at the National Pension Reserve Fund that we raided 15 years ago, and 40 billion in it by the end of the cycle of this government, if they go to term. And then he'll list off all the big infrastructural projects they're doing as well. And he said that's the exact type of resilience that will be inbuilt, come fruition.
There is an argument to spending portions of that now. And if you're spending that on things like infrastructure, on things that actually boost the long-term productive capacity of the economy, or energy infrastructure being a very obvious one, that would be my preferred way to help enterprise as well, but also to help with the cost of living. Energy, a lot, we always talk about housing, but the energy sector and getting that built out, public, private, everything in between, just make it happen. There is an argument there to do that. So I'm not saying that you need to save all of the 15 billion every year, but a better balance would be more prudent. And there are, of course, other things that we need to be aware of. For example, we talk about infrastructure and an extra 2 billion, but where are the construction workers that are actually going to build all of that? Is it just going to lead to demand pressure and inflation within that sector? Or are we going to have to look at ways to encourage and incentivize people? I mean, with an AI revolution coming, we're going to need more people doing jobs that are AI proof, that are in construction, that are building all of this thing. We need more people doing vocation apprenticeships and, yes, work permits for those people as well. So if we can solve out the labour side on construction, we won't be able to solve the housing or the infrastructure crisis.
On housing, Danny, we have a new plan coming down the track, so we don't know exactly what's in it. But to what extent can we guess what might be in it based on the decisions that were made today?
I've no idea even that question. The answer is going to be more difficult. Look, the reality is that we've got to be serious about delivering the output. But we as a society have a simultaneous desire not to make developers or the construction industry rich. And we've been under this for 15 years now. And the truth of the matter is that the construction industry has produced a lot more infrastructure in terms of commercial real estate, in terms of data centres, in terms of a lot of civil engineering projects, but not enough housing. So we can do it. We have the capacity to do it, but we've got to give the right incentives. And so to answer your question, I think incentivization, taxation is one of the things today in terms of VAT going down to 9% on apartments as part of that. So people may not like this incentivization, but, you know, we really need the output. And to Tom's point, and he's right, is the budget is stimulatory in the sense that it's putting more money into the demand side of the economy and supply side may be deficient. So excess demand can come up in two forms, three in fact, higher prices or rationed. You just don't have enough of the things you desire. And maybe the quality could go down as well. Learning from that is that probably the most egregious part of excess demand is actually the rationing.
And we're a society that's rich, but clearly rationed in so many things, from our infrastructure, be it in education, into our medical, into our housing, into our water, into our energy. And if we as a society aren't mature enough to figure this out after about 10 years, and I think that's why I think this budget today is actually quite good. It's starting to reflect that, stopping the real giveaway idea. I think it's very brave not putting the indexation on the income. I think it's the right thing to do, actually. Yeah. It's a mature thing to do, but boys have got to be unpopular.
Tom, before I let you go, because I know you're going to nip out and Danny and Susan are going to stay with me, but would you accept that characterisation of the budget? I thought it was interesting that right at the get-go, Pascal Donoghue said, listen, we're actually reducing the tax measures, the overall value of them by 1.5 to 1.3, because I want to take that 200 and I want to target it at those who need it most. I mean, for a long time, that money would have been found down the back of a couch on budget day.
No,
there was a real sense of we have a finite amount of money this year and we are not going beyond it.
Yeah, I expect the battles were in the lead up to the summer economic statement. And at that point, once the 9.4 had been agreed, the two relevant ministers fought their corner since July. I suspect they probably knew that it was already too expansionary. So it was that fight to keep it at 9.4. So if they wanted to keep all of their line ministers happy, something had to give on the taxation side. So it's good that that happened and that there is a sense that maybe we're beginning to deal with the issue of overruns and going too high. What we didn't see in this budget, and which we might see in the next few weeks, is the five-year plan. How are we going to deal with the fiscal situation out to the end of the decade? Are we going to get down to 5%, 4% each year? Is it going to be a realistic plan, or are we going to continue to ignore the long-term pressures that really are there?
Tom McDonald from the Nevin Economic Research Institute. Tom, thank you very much. Danny McCoy and Susan Hayes-Cullerton are going to stay with me after the break. Carly Bailey from the One Family Policy Group, the manager there, she's going to join us. Danny McCoy from IBEC and Susan Hayes-Cullerton from Taking Stock, both still with me. And we're joined by Carly Bailey, who's the policy manager with One Family. Carly, how would you assess today's budgetary decisions?
I think we would probably at this point describe it maybe more as a mixed bag. I think there is some interesting developments. We've seen some of the calls that we put forward to government. They look like they are at least meeting us some part of the way. They haven't gone all of the way. So that would be in line with things like the child support payment, which is a really heavily targeted support that's really going to those families most in need. And obviously that would include people on low incomes. And obviously, if you're on one income, it's not likely you're going to be potentially earning a huge, huge amount. So that will get to families that are needing it. And they also really kind of... it's very evidence-based led, which we, you know, ourselves and the sector have been looking for them to put this evidence-based policy together. So they're looking at the evidence and seeing that it's very clear that the older children, for example, are costing a lot more to feed and clothe and all the rest of it. So they've really accounted for that differentiation, the payment. Some other changes then in terms of the working family payment, the fact that they've allowed that now as a qualifying payment for fuel allowance is absolutely brilliant news. I will say that I've genuinely welcomed that. And again, really glad they listened to ourselves and the sector on that one, because I think that's going to maybe bring in another 50,000 families. So it's going to make a big impact, particularly with energy bills. For most people, most households are going to be going up now over the winter again. Back to school and clothing and footwear allowance is another one of those sort of key targeted payments that they've been talking about, that we were calling for. Now, they didn't do exactly what we had called for there. What we were suggesting was they would increase. They had done that on previous budgets by 100 euros. They left it back to its original state last year. We were calling for that 100 euros to be reinstated and actually to pay that twice. So it's not just at the ahead of September where costs increase, but it's also at other times of the year where it also increases. You know, children very often go through at least two pairs of shoes over a year. You know, they're growing all the time, and it's a very targeted payment. So it's, again, going to the families that really do need that support the most. So being able to kind of promote that and maybe turn that, I suppose, into a new payment where it's paid more often and more regularly over, and as a permanent measure, not as a universal, maybe one-off type payment. So people could be assured of that in their budget. And then I suppose other things that we were disappointed about were in terms of making work pay for lone parents in particular, there was no increase in the income disregard for their payments. We didn't see an increase that would be needed for social welfare payments more generally. It's only gone up by the 10 euros, which, you know, sounds like something, and it's better, absolutely better than nothing, but they have failed to keep up with the cost of living over the last number of years. So they were already really behind. So we're having a lot of people who, if they're reliant on social welfare, whether that's, you know, because they're ill or they're their disability payments, the lone parent maybe trying to juggle kids with additional needs. There's all sorts of reasons why, you know, you'd be on a payment. So it is difficult to kind of see how that's going to help really get people out of poverty, especially when they've set a target for that. Nothing around childcare. We had a lot of talk about access improvements and not really any clear idea as to how or what or when or why or... That one, I think, is going to be really disappointing for people.
It does seem like they, again, it's kind of goes back to maybe the conversation we were having earlier about kind of finite pools of resources, that they had one there and the money has gone on the disability side there, and kind of expanding access to assessment and needs now, mainly through kind of private provision of it to reduce waiting lists. Mm-hmm. But it seems that that's where that money went.
I don't know if I'd agree with that. Like, these are political choices that are being made. You know, there is money and there's surpluses, also, as we, you know, have already been discussed here. Decisions have been made to give VAT cut rates in certain sectors, and, you know, all of these things, and everybody has a rationale as to why they need or want those things. So I think trying to sort of suggest, well, it didn't go there because it went to another sector or group in society, isn't the way to look at this. There is plenty and enough and more than enough to be looking after people who need that extra bit of support. So yeah, I think that would be where I would stand on that one.
Danny McCoy, to what extent should we interpret all of Budget 2026 in the context of the global situation, economic headwinds, dark clouds looming on the horizon, all of those metaphors?
Yeah, look, all of those things are true, but the momentum of the Irish economy is significant. You know, when you look at the employment growth, even since COVID, we should be very optimistic if we utilise resources we have now to underpin our society, both in terms of the social aspect of our society and to the future. For most, money redistribution isn't an issue. It's the delivery of the tangible services, be they in education or health or housing. And I guess even if you look at something as simple as the 9% VAT reduction on apartments, right? Those who want to buy apartments think, well, that's the price of apartments coming down. Yet on the other side, the developer is saying, well, that's an incentive for us to build the apartments. The same 9%, you know, the reduction, can't go to both. And I think somewhere along that, we need to be able to distinguish where we've got supply side issues and demand side issues. And so globally, I don't think we're going to be devoid of demand. A small, open, competitive economy, demand won't be our constraint. All of our constraints are actually homegrown by the fact that we're not redistributing resources in the proper way. We've put far too much money onto the demand side into households. We see where people spend their money in terms of leisure out of the country. 36 million people going through Dublin Airport. It isn't tourists coming in here, nor business travel, which hasn't got back to 2019 levels. We're seeing that the Irish households have the money. There's 167 billion on deposit last night, owned by Irish households in the Irish banking system. A budget shouldn't keep throwing money at everybody. It should target it, but also should put it to productive use. And I'm very positive about this budget. I think finally it's starting to make those brave political decisions to start to retarget it. So I think it's a good budget.
Pascal Donoghue will be here to talk about the budget in a few minutes' time. Susan, you started by talking about all those different things that you too felt were positive in the budget. Where has it fallen short, if anywhere, in your mind?
Oh no, there's plenty of places that it's fallen short, that's for sure. I think if we were to look at students for a start, they only got a 500 euro reduction this year, which was really a 500 increase over the past 2 years. We've also seen that there has been an increase in the income threshold for SUSE grants, so that has risen by 5,000 to 120,000 euro per household, which I agree with, but the money the students get won't increase. And I get, you know, we've had conversations here about expansionary budgets, but students are they're really, really under pressure, obviously, in terms of accommodation and so on like that. Another thing, when I look at carers, I think it would have been wonderful to see if the means test and the income disregard for carers would have gone higher. One of the things that carers were looking for as well is that the carers payment grant, that they would have got it in two instalments rather than one. So if it is the case that people aren't, let's say that they're caring for somebody who dies or else somebody who goes into a nursing home at the date that it's subsequently issued, they don't get that payment at all and they can feel disproportionately affected as a result. So I think certainly, Kieran, there's plenty of places that I would have liked to have seen more. The other thing, and we haven't gotten to it yet, and I know Danny referred to this as an enterprise-focused budget, but that R&D tax credit, I welcome it, the expansion of it, both the scope and, the percentage and the threshold. But I think a lot of small businesses, what I would have loved to have seen is that it would have expanded the scope to what it actually is. Now, what we did hear was that, you know, it's the pathway to an innovation type support. But I think there's an awful lot of businesses around the country outside of hospitality and hairdressing, maybe retail or professional services or graphic designers, etc., who don't know how to be more innovative and therefore wouldn't know how to avail of that. And then from the perspective of AI and all that type of thing, there is a revision now of the local enterprise office supports. I think the LEOs do a super job throughout the country. But again, it's about businesses coming forward and applying for them, but also respectively listening to what businesses want themselves.
Susan Hayes-Cullerton, Danny McCoy, Carly Bailey, thank you all very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.
Hey football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.